The town of Bedrock, there a place for a lot of history.
I'm only kidding.
Let's
welcome back.
We are family down the street.
Through the
when you're at Seeks Coffee, we're doing the show. All right. We're back.
We turned Esther off there.
Poor Cal is like, what the hell? He probably thinks something else is in the coffee here today. We're doing the Maryland Crab Cake Tour. I lost control. It's coffee. It's Zeke's. I knew. Rasig's got his cafe complete.
I miss my restaurant.
The great Dan Rodericks has decided to remain. He doesn't know why. With us, the coffee because the coffee's good.
I'm enjoying myself. I really am enjoying myself.
I want you to because I've never really met Kevin. I just know him through his work. He was deposed a few weeks ago.
He definitely was deposed.
I kept calling him deposed. Yeah. He said, no, right. I walked away. Yeah,
right.
So
You were deposed.
If I had made it from January 6, 1986 is my employment date at the Sun. If I had made it to the end, I would have been deposed at some point as well. So,
Of course.
Kevin is here. He is the cartoonist extraordinaire. Dan was the longtime columnist. Rasig just did funny sports cartoons. And all I did was get coffee for guys like this back in the 80s and Chase Rockstars Ranch. It's all brought to you by the Baltimore Maryland Lottery. We're in the heart of Baltimore at Zeke's Coffee. We're in Lauraville. We've been fueled by Zeke's. I got biscuits. I got chicken sandwiches. We talked about civets that boot beans. Now we're going to talk about the important stuff, democracy and politics and journalism and important things like that. You do it with words. You do it with images. You did it with, you know, some semblance of whatever you did it with at Crack Magazine.
That's a good...
But there is something that we all share in common, right? Like, and that is, I'm my guy. Had my name on it. Had your name on it. My dad loved that I worked at the paper. My dad was thrilled that I worked at the paper because it had my name on it. And he could cut it out, and it meant something. And if it has your name on it, you got to believe in it. And if it and if it has your name above that, I hope you believe in it. A lot of people I know in modern world work for people... They don't really believe in the cause for where they work or what they do. In our line of work, when it's got your name on it, you got to believe in what you're doing. And I mean, hats off to you to sticking it out to the end. I think some of us may have seen it sort of coming. You've been there a long time.
Yep.
Give your whole background, because I don't know a whole lot about you, but these guys know you well. I'm sure you've crossed paths many times.
Best cartoonist in the Economist area.
You know that Cal, his main gig, really, is for years has been with The Economist.
Yes, exactly.
And The Sun was kind of a side gig?
For a while, I mean, it was kind of an interesting thing. So I started my cartoon world as a kid. Drawing teachers in the classroom and getting myself in trouble there. And I did a cartoon strip when I was in college, and my senior thesis at college was a 13-minute long animated cartoon. And I always thought that I was going to go into animation, but right after graduation, I got on a bicycle, led a bicycle tour of kids to England, and then stayed in Europe for the next 11 years. I played semi-pro basketball for 3 years. And was doing a lot of coaching, but I got
point
my
guard.
I was a point guard.
I'm looking at you. 5'10", maybe.
Yeah. Well, I was taller then. The English weather kind of shrinks you with all that rain. You know? So
all the mushy peas.
So what happened was that I started looking for cartoon jobs pretty early on because the basketball team was on financial rocky ground, and my first job, believe it or not, was with The Economist. Who, you know, this reverend international publication, back then it was smaller in scope than it is today, distributed around the world. I didn't know anything about British politics, about any outside politics, but I could draw a little bit, and they thought they'd give me a shot, and I was just really lucky to be there when they were looking for someone. And now...
And what year is this?
1978.
Oh, wow. Okay.
So I'm going to have my 50th anniversary with them in a couple years' time.
That's a lot of draw.
That is fantastic.
Crazy. Yeah, that's great.
Can I just ask you, has anybody ever come in and said, don't draw it that way? Or, you know, I've had that in my business where somebody came in and said, no, you're not going to say it that way. You're going
to
say it this way.
Yes, go ahead.
That was the beginning of the end. I mean, for me, you know, anybody who knows me knows that. I would think anybody that knows a strong voice of any kind, that's just not part of being a strong voice, literally. I mean,
well, Dan and I, you know, Dan's a columnist, he's an opinion maker, and he understands that, you know, we have editors and we have an audience we're trying to connect with, so we just can't do anything, right? We can't do everything you know, we have to make sure our whatever we contribute, it's not going to be racist or sexist. It's got to be able to connect with the audience that we have.
How are you going to win president without that?
What's that?
How are you going to win a president without being racist or sexist?
Well, no, of
course, yeah, exactly. Yeah.
You know, but anyway, so that going to your point, I think you know, understanding how best to push the line, get out there to make your opinion so that they're challenging to people, they make people think. You're going to inevitably, particularly when you're in Baltimore, you got one newspaper. Every column you write, every cartoon you do is going to piss somebody off. It's just part of the deal. Mm-hmm. And when we were at the paper before the internet, like 90% of our contact with the public was negative. People were writing in, right?
Yeah, and people usually emails. Didn't write a letter unless they were.
Yeah, they didn't write and say, I love you, right? You
know, yeah, sometimes, but more often it was when they were upset about something.
Yeah. And people just assume that you heard it, that you heard that, hey, you know, great job. We didn't, but it was just part of the deal. We just
especially editors.
Yeah.
Editors would very rarely give a compliment to what you were doing.
Yeah, yeah.
Which you think is, well, that's not good. Aren't they supposed to encourage you? Mm. But you're pretty much on your own, I think. Didn't you think so? You want to connect with readers more than other journalists.
Yeah.
Now I think a lot of journalists do certain kinds of work to impress other journalists.
Yeah.
And I don't know that it always connects with the readers.
Can I give a shout out to Jack Gibbons, who I'm sure you all know?
Yeah,
Jack is responsible for my career. Jack was the one that literally gave me my job.
A large part.
You know, so this was literally, this is who I am. July 11th, I saw this thing. It was my day my dad died, anniversary of that. And I saw this, you know, you see things on Facebook. And it says, the bosses we remember. Can I just read these 9 things to you? Provided a safe place to grow. Opened career doors. Defended us when we needed it. Recognized and rewarded us. Developed us as leaders. Inspired us to stretch higher. Led by example. Told us our work mattered. Forgave us when we made mistakes. Grace. I wrote to Jack Gibbons and said, you did all 9 of these. I mean, that's unbelievable. I said, that is all you did, all 9 of these.
100%.
And I'm thinking to myself, I don't know anybody else in the world who could. I said, you wrote me dozens of encouraging notes in the late 1980s that you've completely forgotten about, but I have a copy of every one.
So I had
a different ride in that way as a young man.
I had Ernie Imhoff.
Yeah.
Ernie Imhoff, who was the last managing editor of the Evening Sun.
Who, by the way, covered the Beatles press conference at the Civic Center back in 60. He did.
Wow.
Yes, he did. I know that
about Ernie. I just can't keep up with it.
No one can keep up with Nestor.
Ernie did.
Okay, good. All right. Anyway, I was making the point that he was that kind of guy in the newsroom of the Evening Sun.
Yeah, yeah.
Supportive.
All those things, yeah.
All right.
Yeah. Well, one of the things you said before about all the negative stuff we got before, but now with the internet, we can get likes. I mean, that's pretty cool,
the likes
right?
Are nice. Yeah.
And you can get friends. Wow.
Yeah, that's true.
You do get trolls, though. Yeah. You do get trolls, and in fact, it's a bit crazier.
I think when you've been doing it as long as all of us have been doing whatever we've been doing, I do what I do. And I know you do what you do. You're not trying to please anybody.
Yeah.
You're not even really thinking about who's reading it so much as of what you want to say, because anybody can read it. Anybody
can
read it.
You want to have fun, you know?
Yeah, but you think about your audience. I do
think about my audience, but I mean, yeah, you have to think about your audience. But I'm there to have fun in my format
but
now.
But I don't think you're making the music just for one person. You're trying to make what's in your soul to get out, and you hope that one person sees it, and then two, and then three, and then they'll share it, and they'll like it, and they'll stick around for the next column or the next cartoon or the next show or whatever.
Exactly.
But I do think that I've moved to the point, and I do a lot of this all day, and we all make a lot of content, that it's just what we want to say, and knowing that our audience might like it, they might hate it, but they need to hear it, and we need to say it. Mm. It needs to be said by me. If I say it, it feels like it has to come out of me.
Can I just add something? Cal and I, we first got to the Sun, it was in the 80s, right? Mm. I got to the Sun in the 70s, developed my column really in the early 80s. When people wrote a letter complaining about what your point of view or what you had to say or what you expressed with a cartoon, they may not agree with you, but they were civil about it.
Oh,
I didn't get letters that began with, you're a piece of shit.
Right.
Right.
And the last 10, 15 years, especially the last 10 years.
Yes.
The hate mail, it went from just disagreeing and providing an argument for why they disagree to you're a piece of shit.
Right.
And, I toss those, but I think, can't the other side, like, articulate what it is they disagree with? I mean, what did I wrote a column about, Obamacare or something. And you're a piece of shit? I'm sorry for using this language,
it's
but
fine.
This is the kind of letters I would get. But there'd be no
worse.
Argument. There'd be, worse.
Yeah, worse.
There'd be no argument, no constructive criticism, no erudite disagreement based on facts or anything. That disappeared. The internet is great, but you get a lot of that.
Oh, yeah.
Oh,
right?
Yeah.
You get a lot of that.
The other part of that is when you write in words, and your column, you write shorter than I do. When I write long form. I'm explaining.
Yeah,
You guys do this big. I look at it. I'm looking for Nick the Greek and yours down in the corner or whatever subliminal little things you might put
that's
in.
That's great. Yeah.
Hopefully it's not one of those carousels at the City Fair. It's another story.
Oh, that's a completely
different story. That was a different thing. I just want to throw that one in for a cheap shot. But, but when you're putting
great
that
memories.
Together, pissing people off, as a cartoonist in whatever you're doing, you're punching, dude. This is not a subtle thing. He's trying to be somewhat subtle and get people to read through it and think through it or whatever. You're punching people in the mouth, I think, as a cartoonist. It's got to punch, and it's got to be strong, and then the little subtle things around it, the little clouds around the outside, I look at it. Man, you got a wild art. I mean, I used to watch him do his work, and I used to come into the News American for whoever the political cartoonist was there 50. I didn't know anyone at the Sun who did the work. It was a different job shift in a different place, but I would come by and watch his mind work with sports, and it's what you do, I think, to anybody that writes. It's an amazing thing.
When you talk about a punch, though, no one does it better than Cal, like in a small space.
What do you love about his work?
Cal is brilliant to
the point. To begin
his
with.
Caricatures are incredible.
Yeah.
He uses panels.
I like when he uses the panels.
Yeah, I love Cal.
Yeah, I do.
No, his panel work is amazing. Yeah.
All right, but run me through the mindset.
I adore Cal's work.
Well, run me through the mindset of this, of like, you have a topic, whatever it is. Colbert today.
Yeah.
Are
you
going to Colbert yet?
Sure. Yeah, yeah.
You've already drawn one.
No, I haven't drawn one. But
okay,
I mean,
so let's talk about that and run through your mind of what that's going to look like, because you're going to have a column on it. I've already said my piece.
I thought of Cal immediately when the Colbert news came through. You know, just someone that was just kind of forced out because of his opinions. You know, like, I think you're kind of hand in hand there.
Well, it's nice being used in the same sentence with Colbert. I mean, that's really amazing thing.
Yeah.
Well, when I start a cartoon, it's probably really similar to what Dan is when you're doing a column, right? So you're engaging with the idea, the thought, the point that you want to talk about.
The punch.
Yeah, and it's really important. And this is before you come up with the way you do it. It's the journalism part, getting all the pieces together and then formulating what you want to say.
It means you have to read.
Yeah.
Read other people's work, starting with that.
Yeah. And so the funny thing is, when people think about cartoons, they think, oh, you're coming with the fun stuff first, but there's all this kind of groundwork to begin with.
Yeah.
And once you've established your point, then you get the satire hat on, you get the cartooning hat on of all the different ways you can approach it, and then you start scribbling. And literally, I mean, my first sketch looked like hieroglyphics. And they mean something to me, but nobody can read them. And you're doing a bunch of those until you see the glimmer of an idea. And then when you start to push the idea, you're doing it on paper, back and forth. But you're exploring on paper. Your brain is now on a piece of paper. And you're trying to move pieces around and add bits, take stuff out. And sometimes you go down an hour drawing, you realize you're down the wrong path. You got to throw that away and start all over again.
Yeah.
And the idea, of course,
rip up the lead.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Is to go. I was a sports writer. Sometimes the team will come back and
then the
whole story's gone.
Yeah. So it's funny. It's this kind of dance. in your own brain. You're having, don't you guys find that when you're creative, you're having a conversation with like five people in your brain?
Oh, sure. Right?
Why don't you try this? Ah, no, we tried it before. It's not so good.
Is that funny? This is funnier. Like, yeah.
All that kind of stuff.
And you have no sounding board. Your wife, a friend, you know, like literally.
Yeah.
Like, it's not, what do I can ask AI now. What do you think of this, right, or whatever.
Right.
But, I mean, in your own mind, and I asked, you know, I asked Steve Rouse this last week. I had him on. And he had sort of a morning show and an FCC license and an audience that was much more broad that you're in the car. Somebody's got their daughter in the car. Mm-hmm. Where's the line on a funny joke? Where,
right.
You know, where's the edge on what I can get away with? I had the seven words on FCC I couldn't get away with.
Right.
I've always felt like you, maybe even more than sports cartoonist, the political cartoonist has the ability to be really mean, make fun of things that in words we wouldn't be able to get away with in certain ways, right?
Yeah.
Portraying racism in words is ugly. Portraying racism in cartooning is a punch.
Mm.
You know, with the image that a word can't put across, that one picture. A picture's worth 1,000 words, right?
Yeah,
literally, right?
Well, there's a case in South Africa during the height of apartheid that they had all these press laws, and they could really strictly control the printed part because they knew they had words. They could say, you can't use that word, or those, you know, that thought. But they couldn't control the cartoons. They didn't know how to govern the cartoons. You either get rid of them all or you let them in.
So
talk about racism, they were able to kind of get away with an awful lot.
Yeah.
Well, Cal is here. Dan Rodericks is here. Rasig is here. We're talking about journalism. And do you want to talk about the state of who owns these places at this point? Because it's greatly affected your life. Right. It certainly has affected my life, all of our lives, and what media is going to become when you get orphaned and there's no cow to come along. You get thrown out or decide to leave and you're after almost 50 years and there's no Dan Rodgers coming along.
Yeah.
There's no Nestor doing a sports here to hold the Ravens accountable when they have a predator kicker or when they have a head coach who would be so proud of his association with Donald Trump that he tried to hide it. I saw you wrote about that last week as well. So, or that I would be in his office and he's saying things to me like, the China virus. John Harbaugh would say those things to me. But if I took that on the radio, that would be off the record.
Right.
I don't know, you know, but we're in a different world now with who we piss off, how we can piss them off, and how we can make a living when Stephen Colbert can't. And when 60 Minutes doesn't have a chance,
right.
I'm worried for all of us.
Of course.
I really am.
Yep.
Dan, no?
Yeah. You know, we've had corporate ownership of media for quite a while now. The last family newspapers disappeared, 30 years ago?
A.S. Abel, right? Literally?
Well, that was the one we had in Baltimore. But, when local people owned a local newspaper, that's been going away. Newspapers have been folding. People, I don't know where people are getting their local information from, television, maybe. Even television, local TV is having stresses. So I'm not quite sure where people are getting all their information. Are people reading the New York Times every day? No, but a lot of people do. A lot of people just catch a headline on a social media blast, or they see a video and they feel like they've got the full story, and you don't have the full story. I spend hours before I ever write a column, spend hours reading what's going on or watch a video or something like that, or talk to people on the phone, read a report. The other day, to write a column, just yesterday, I read a lengthy clinical report about this thing called moral injury that we were talking about earlier. Why I spent some time doing that is because I wanted to know as much about that as I could in the time that I had before I committed myself to an opinion about it. And it takes time. I think that's still being done in journalism. I think journalists are still doing that job. Why people don't trust it more, I wonder. Why people have such a low regard for the media, I'm not sure I understand. I think it's because people have gone to their silos. Conservatives go to the conservative echo chamber, if you want to call it that, and liberals go over here, and then some people are still in the middle, like weighing both sides. Some people do that. I think most people have picked a side. And they find media that affirms what they already believe.
Well, the algorithm's built for that, too.
Yes.
The algorithm is built to show you what you want to see. I mean, on your phones, you are getting.
Oh yeah, you're getting more of, and then you get more of what you want to see.
Have you guys touched any AI at all? In any way?
Well, the last 12 weeks. I'm sure when you Google something, you get.
I'm talking about like for the kind of research you're talking about on what you wrote about, AI would be helpful. And I'm only saying that as the young guy here amongst old guys. I'm 50. I'll be 57 at the end of the summer. The last 6 weeks, 8 weeks, literally I spent large parts of my day every day the last 6 weeks learning AI. And I'm blown away. You're all looking at me with the eye. And I'm like, I am blown away. And I'm telling you, you're going to get blown away too.
Isn't it built into Google? It's built into Google.
It is.
But from a research standpoint, searching on a Gemini or searching in one of those places to build idea. I mean, it would lend itself. You don't trust it.
I don't trust it. No, because it might come up with an answer. It might cite some sources. But are those the only sources?
It needs to be rechecked, of course, like everything else. But I'm finding it to be an inch. It's not going away. It's here to stay in like every single way. With a couple of words, say, draw me an illustration of color that looks like the work of Kevin Gallagher of the Baltimore Sun and The Economist. And it will mimic you to do whatever cartoon I would say, and it would do it in 30 seconds. It won't be as good. And it's not going to be as good.
Yeah.
But it could give you an idea what could be good.
Oh, yeah.
And all I'm saying is, for me, it's an idea generator at this point, but it's a scary, powerful thing that I think I'm going to go back and have my Bryant Gumbel moment where the internet, what is this thing here?
Right.
I don't want to be that guy with AI because I see it as too. Business is going to adopt it and it's going to put all of us out of work. It just is. I don't think there's any question about that. That's not a silly existential threat. That's something I'm trying to, as a 56-year-old, move toward to make it my friend instead of my enemy. That's all. It was my enemy 3 months ago. I'm telling you, the last 90 days, I've started to harness it a little bit. Just in this piece that we're doing right now, getting this to market as a video and an audio is a lot of back work, right? I put it into a transcript now. Do you know how long it would have taken years ago to get a transcript of this conversation? Now it happens in 10 seconds.
Yeah.
And our readers, a lot of people say, I like to read what they're having to say or whatever. But that's just one little use. But the last couple of weeks, I would just say it as content creators, being afraid of it's bad, but being respectful of it and skeptical of it, I'm skeptical of it as well. Yeah. But I feel like I need to drive it. You know, I just do.
Yeah, yeah.
I think it might affirm biases. So if you're talking about algorithm, right? If you're used to searching, say, information that affirms your view that the Supreme Court is way too conservative, you keep coming up with stories or opinion pieces that reaffirm that.
That was the thing about the search engine is all right-leaning. Everybody knows that. Grok is the name of his search engine. So if you go to his, you are getting polluted material. I don't think there's any doubt about that.
I think AI will just say, well, this person wants to see, they want a steady diet of this type of steak, and I'll keep giving it to them.
Okay.
Yeah, that's what I worry about with AI.
I'm going to let you graduate and give one last plug because everybody over there thought the Baltimore stickers were mine because I'm Baltimore positive.
Oh.
And you're Baltimore, I have no idea. I don't even have bumper stickers.
Can I just say
one thing before Dan goes?
Go ahead.
I mean, it is awesome for me. You know, these two guys not only are great journalists, but Dan, of course, with his plays and his acting and everything. And Cal, I've seen him do improv, stand-up.
Yeah.
He's amazing. You know, like, both of these guys are multi-talented. Super multi-talented guys.
Plus, he played basketball.
Did not know that, Cal. Oh, my God, Cal. Yeah.
Tell everybody when your play's coming back and where to find everything, Dan, because I'm going to bid you adieu. But he's got a new schedule. He's got a new play coming out, 1966
in March. Oh, I know.
March.
Super fun. So, looking forward to that.
Oh, yeah.
So we have a website called You Have No Idea. .org, where you get information about the plays. The new play is called No Mean City, Baltimore 1966. It'll be on stage at the Baltimore Museum of Art Theater in March.
And I'll be there.
Yeah, I hope so.
Opening night. I hope so.
And then the following December of 26, we're doing Baltimore You Have No Idea again with some new material in it.
Oh, you're adding? Keep adding.
Awesome. Yeah. Yeah.
That's great.
So thank you for letting me plug away.
But Rasim's not only saying that because he's in your play. Because Rasig is in Baltimore.
Oh, I am in the play. Cal, I'm in.
Really?
Oh, you remember
right.
that? I got my Earth Day dummy.
That's right. I saw the picture
cool.
at the beginning. That's
the
very
first
cool.
night I went to the play. Dan had done my show at Fadley's a couple years ago, and we were going to. I was take my wife. It was cold as hell. We got there a little late. We had done the Christmas lights, 34th Street. You know,
yeah.
We got there a little late. Walked in. I got seats right in the front row on the side, and the piano player comes out and does his little. Plug your piano player. Who's the
Matt Lane?
Brilliant guy.
Mike
right?
Lane's son.
Yeah.
Baltimore. Doing the piano thing. And it's Baltimore, and they're showing all these Baltimore images. And there's Rasig, and I got my phone. I'm like, click, click. And I took a picture of you with the dummy. Not this dummy, Bob Irsay, the other dummy.
Did you get it?
Yeah, and I texted to him.
Yeah, that's how I found out.
He didn't go with me that night.
No, that's
and
how
I said,
found out
you're
in
the show, dude. Yeah, and you're in the show in the first 3 minutes?
It's the overture video.
I've only seen the show twice, but I remember you.
And the trench coat.
Dan Rodericks is bidding adieu.
All right. Thank you.
Not deposed. He left. He went and dropped the mic. Just went boom to the mic.
Yeah.
This guy here is going to stay after he eats a sandwich. Cal is here, Kevin Colliger, as well as Rasig. We're going to come back. We're going to talk more cartoon. We're going to talk more about coffee, and we're going to talk more about cartoons, and you're going to teach me some jokes when
that's
we come
it.
Back. All right, that sandwich is going to make things better. I'm Nestor. It's all brought to you by the Maryland Lottery. Our friends here, the Pressure Lux are out now, and the Lucky Seven Doublers. Just for a little while, the Raven Scratch-Offs come in a couple of weeks. Back for more of the Maryland Crab Cake Tour right after this.